Spirit Blade Underground, episode 330. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 330.
Welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and very unique community you're invited to check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.net. On the show today, a conversation about collecting action figures and some thoughts for creative geeks taken from Psalm 39. Here we go! Okay, that hard, sticky thing you pulled off, that's part of the skull, right? And this pinkish-white stuff is the brain?
Yes. Might I suggest an alternative?
No, listen to me. We can't turn back now. I've got to know what they're thinking.
Have you considered talking to them?
All right, sew that back on. We'll give it a try. I'm talking to Nathan James Norman, host of the Untold podcast. Nathan's been on the show a couple times before, but I wanted to talk to him about something that's a little bit unusual about him that he shared with me just recently. So thank you, Nathan, for being brave enough to come on the podcast and talk about this hobby of yours.
Absolutely, yes. This is it's probably going to ruin my career, change how people view about me. But hey, anything just, you know, to get on the Untold, or not on the Untold podcast, onto the Spirit Blade Underground podcast.
Well, it's actually not that weird. I mean, I put that in there just to kind of tantalize. But I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, this is not going to seem weird to you at all. But we haven't talked about it before, and that's action figures, collecting action figures. So you're an action figure collector. When did you first start collecting, would you say?
That's interesting, because I mean, it goes back to childhood, obviously, and so I had them as a kid, and I don't know if it was necessarily collecting them in more of an adult sense, but it was certainly, you know, I wanted to have all the Ninja Turtles and all the superheroes that I could find. You know, as a teenager, it seemed to persist, and certainly older teenage years, and then into an adult, it's just like, why in the world am I buying action figures? But I still was, and there was times and periods of non-action figure buying, but then a line would come out, and all of a sudden I'd find myself saying, well, I'm going to get one, and then I'd get another one. So probably, I mean, so I don't know, my whole life, maybe, whoever bought me my first one started it.
Okay. So then, I mean, it sounds like for the most part, it's been pretty consistent. So tell me, because I am not, that's an area of geekery that I just kind of never really got into. Can you tell me what the appeal is, why you're drawn to collecting action figures?
I have no clue. I really don't. I've been thinking about this. I've Googled it, you know. I've looked up YouTube videos. I've never come across a really satisfying answer for it. And I really don't know the answer why. But as I was thinking through, you know, kind of categories and maybe theological categories. Theological is probably a little too specific, but homiletical categories, which is crazy. I'm bringing my preaching into this. But you think about it, and so these characters that you love, whether they're in movies or books or comics, there's an abstraction there versus concrete. Concrete is something that you can touch and feel and is right in front of you. You can listen to, but the more abstract, there's kind of a ladder of abstraction. Concrete is like it's really here right now. You're in the room with it, but then you get more abstract. You know, you start talking about it. You tell stories about it. It's in a movie. It's on, it's in a book, it's a comic, and then it's like prose. And so, the more abstract it gets, the less, I don't know, concrete it is. It's harder to make a connection to it. And so I think the appeal of action figures is the same reason everyone wants to see their favorite book or comic put into a movie.
Oh.
Whether or not it's a good movie, it makes it more concrete because if you're reading the book, you go from typically a prose book, just narrative words on a page, and you know, that's good and it stokes the imagination, but then you're like, I want, you know, it'd be awesome if this could be made into a comic. So they make it into a comic and now it's visual in addition to the words. And then you're like, hey, this is really cool. It'd be awesome if they could make it into a cartoon. Wow. Okay. So you make it into a cartoon, you have motion. And now they say make it into a movie. So live action, real actors. And then you got cosplay. No, that doesn't quite fit into it. but you want it more real. And so I think part of the appeal is here you have characters that you enjoy or like. And now you can, instead of being something on a flat page or even a TV screen, now you can, the property you love, you can, it's a little more real. It's not totally real. It's still somewhat abstract. It's not an actual person, obviously. But now it's a little bit more real and now you can pose it. And, you can make them do what you want them to do. So I think that's part of the appeal. Of it, if I can, and I'm not a psychologist, but if I can armchair psychologize it and maybe get into a little bit of the theology, that's a very loose term, but theology behind it.
You got like way smarter with that answer than I was anticipating. I was like, what? Dang, there's like some rabbit trails we could go on there. I mean, I think of like, you know, it's like have you seen, what's the movie? I want to say it's like called Trekkies or Trekkers, or maybe there's two different documentaries. And about, you know, people who just kind of embrace that lifestyle. They deck out their house to look like the inside of the Enterprise or you think of like the, you know, hardcore Star Wars fans who like adopt the philosophy of the Jedi's, you know, as kind of like their personal way of life. And but yeah, I think there's a whole rabbit trail there. We got to do a whole show on, you know, on, you know, making what your hobby is, making that more and more concrete. That is a really interesting observation. Okay, so on the more shallow end of things now, how many, if you don't mind sharing, and if you don't want to share, that's fine, because I know that you might potentially have people in your congregation listening. But how many figures would you estimate are in your collection?
I would have no clue. You threw this out at me at the pre-interview meeting. It hadn't even occurred to me to even think about it, which is crazy. But I've got boxes. You know, if it's been going on for years. I mean, I wouldn't even be able to put a number on it. I could give you a summary of kind of the things I've collected over the years.
Well,
that I actually care about.
Okay.
And I'll do that real quick. I have Star Trek figures from Playmates from the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Babylon 5. I think I have all of them. Lord of the Rings, the trilogy movies, Superpowers. That one goes back pretty far.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Total Justice, which was a kind of a JSA thing. It turned into a JSA thing. Man of Steel, Superman thing, Legends of Batman. Some of that stuff was cool. It got a little weird when they had like Viking Batman and swashbuckling Batman with Buccaneer Joker.
I remember seeing the ads for those. Oh my gosh.
what am I looking at? Yeah, but I have a few of those. Some of those actually came
from
the comics.
When would Batman need this costume?
Well, ironically, you had after Bruce Wayne died, he was traversing history, right?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And so, but that happened after the toy line. So I don't know if that was art imitating action figure life. I don't know. another rabbit trail. DC Universe Classics has been the most recent one. It's been pretty extensive from Mattel. It's pretty much dead, but they've yet to come out with Doomsday Unleashed. And I think they finally, after telling us that they're not going to make us buy other things, they finally announced that that's going to be the official end of the line, and you have to order them and spend all sorts of money. But but that one's been the one most recently, and then Infinite Crisis, which is like a 3 3/4 inch action figure line. So pretty small and lots of stuff. Yeah, so yeah, so I have a bunch, and it's been over the years that I've collected them. And sometimes, you know, you pay price for them. Sometimes you go to a convention or something and you see them for pennies on the dollar or dollar bin. And you're like, cool, sweet.
So now are these, do you display these somewhere, or are they tucked away in an attic, or where are they?
Well, currently, because I've had the pleasure of having to move, 9 times in the last 7 years.
Oh my gosh.
Two of those was like church office moves, but that's still a pretty extensive move.
Yeah.
There's currently very few displayed in the house. But typically what I've done ever since I got married 7 years ago is I'll have, I don't know, you know, maybe 20 or so action figures out somewhere in my designated. They're tolerable here. Usually it's kind of like above the washing machine and dryer or in the basement or crawl space, spiders. And so I'll have them, and then I've got boxes and bins and stuff, and I'll get sick and tired of having those guys up, and I'll just kind of recycle and put those away, dust them off, and put some new ones out, and toss them up. But I've also got them in, when I was a youth pastor at a very large church, I had action figures in my office, but whatever, you're trying to make a good impression and everything. And so I had them, I had predominantly, it was actually the Green Lantern Corps, and they were hidden in like the office plants in my office. So you couldn't really see them unless you were like looking for them.
Nice.
But now that I'm a senior pastor, whatever that means, and I don't care anymore because I can't go anywhere but down from here.
That's right.
I have in my office currently, I have the New 52 Justice League. My mother-in-law actually bought me like the set.
Wow.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Your mother-in-law?
My own in-laws are embracing. Wow. Oh yeah. My father-in-law bought me like this, awesome Swamp Thing action figure with wings. I think they've given up on me. They're just like, he's weird, he's bizarre. He takes good care of the family.
It's because you're a pastor. I think my in-laws were more impressed with me when I was a pastor for a couple years, and and I think the honeymoon's worn off, or at least they're not like as impressed. They're like, oh yeah, that's Peter. He's weird.
Yeah, that's another rabbit trail, but we're not going to go there publicly. Yeah. I do love my in-laws though, in my office, so I've got them, and I've got a few Flashpoint guys, and actually I've got Vampire Batman from the Red Rain comic.
Oh, yeah.
Hiding behind a picture of my wife, because I, you know, if someone comes in there, I don't want to freak them out too much.
Is he hiding behind her, or is he about to strike?
Probably about to strike. Didn't really think that one through.
Okay, so what do you... it sounds like these are maybe out of their boxes. I mean, do you keep them out of their boxes? Do you play with these, or what kind of handling is going on here?
Yeah, most of them come out of the boxes. I still have a few that have not made it out of the box yet, just mostly because I haven't had a chance to pull them out for a rainy day when I'm really bored, which doesn't happen often. although I just took a few Star Trek figures out of their boxes recently. But for a totally different reason. Anyways, but most of them come out of the boxes, and that it's always like a little part of me dies, you know, when you pull them out of the box. You're like, this will never be worth as much as it is. they won't, their pose that they have in the box won't be there. But it's like, you know, what's it going to do if it doesn't, it doesn't look nearly as cool in the box.
Yeah.
On your desk or in your shelf as when they're out, and you can change them around a little bit and pose them and, you know, have them striking into the heart of their enemy or whatever it is.
Nice.
So most of them come out. I think probably there's very few cases where I don't take them out of the box. Like the Babylon 5 ones are mostly, unless I had a double of it just by chance.
Okay.
I'm really not that kind of person. They're for the most part in the box because they're really, a lot of them, especially the later ones, are really hard to find. And in fact, I think the Shadow Warrior, Shadow Sentinel, whatever it is, I mean, I think he's still going for like $300+ on eBay if you're, wow, if he's in the box. And wow, that's not even like he's graded in the box. He's in the box and they got edges that are weird. And it's like $300 and I was just like, I can't pull him out of the box.
Oh, man.
Even though this is probably the coolest figure I own.
Wow.
But by and large, most of them are out of the box so that they can, you know, be displayed and used. But I don't really play with them, for the most part. I'll set them up and I'll put them in a pose and,
okay,
you know, have them on display. And in my current office, I have them on top of, all of my to read theology books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on, the characters are based on the books. So I have piles of books, like beefy theology books, has like Superman and Wonder Woman on them.
Nice.
And then like, ones that I want to read really quick have like the Flash on them. And then, and then possibly lame ones, Aquaman's on top of.
Oh, no love.
But they're possibly lame. So, you know, Cyborg's also on them because they could be really good, too.
No, you should put Aquaman like on some kind of like a songbook of all like redone hymns that people used to think were lame but are now really cool.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's where Aquaman belongs.
I'll have to shuffle him around from time to time. Well, it depends on who's writing him, really.
So now you and your wife recently had an addition to the family, yeah?
Two, actually. But okay. Yeah, so we've got a foster daughter that we're hoping to adopt. And I just put it that way because I don't want to – can't go into it right now.
Sure, sure.
And about 4 days after she came into our home, we found out that we were a month pregnant.
Wow.
and so we went from 0 to 2 kids in 8 months. And, you know, we get the newborn and it's like, all right, we know how to handle toddlers now. What do we do with the baby? Which is, yeah, a weird place to be, because if you have a toddler, you should know how to handle infants.
I want you to look into the future. And like maybe 6 years, 7 years from now, do you see the possibility of one of your children playing with this, with any parts of your collection?
Some parts of it.
And that doesn't freak you out?
Not too much. Some of it, but no, I'll say, you know, some Babylon 5 stuff they're never going to touch. But then like the DC Universe classics, I mean, those are still probably a little too old for them. I mean, I figured if, you know, around 12, you know, 10, 11, 12, they could handle them, because I mean, they're going to be bashing them together and stuff. But like some of the Legends of Batman, you know, like Swashbuckling Joker. Yeah, go for it. For my daughter, they've got the little people Justice League, and so it's got like Superman and Wonder Woman, and
dude, we got those too. Yeah, those little those little short and stout, you know, mm-hmm, DC characters. Yeah, those are awesome.
And it's great because she's two and she's in church, and my son's got like a Superman onesie on, and she points to it and goes Superman, and everyone else goes, She's two. She shouldn't know this.
Yeah.
I take her into the comic book store. She's like, Spider-Man, Batman. And everyone's like, what is happening? And I'm like, that's right. Train up a child.
That is awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I just got down about a year ago, and then progressively more and more since then, I got down, my old Masters of the Universe figures, which had spent about a decade and a half at least, in the garage. And as it turns out, that's not good in the Arizona heat for their little rubber band attached legs. So I've been watching all these muscle bound guys get their legs ripped off one at a time. but my boys are having a blast with it. And, you know, it's just like, hey, you know, they were just in a box somewhere and now they're getting use, and maybe this will be their swan song. But, that's cool by me.
Yeah, I noticed the Castle Grayskull in the background of the Christian Geek Central videos. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So my boys have been, they recently had me or begged me to get that down. And so I got it down a couple times, but now my youngest, he's like, he wasn't treating it well. So it might be back up on the shelf for future videos for a while still. We'll see. Okay. Well, before we wrap up here, tell me what the Crossover Alliance anthology is.
Yes. Before I go there, I have to share a couple things real quick on action figures. In the end, I think it is an utterly pointless hobby. I really do. I mean, I there's no purpose to it. I mean, I'm not collecting to resell these things. And if I can armchair psychologize myself, and I'm not speaking for anybody else, but for me, being a super busy, person, I'm so far behind in the movie schedule. You know, I haven't seen The Wolverine yet. Mm. I haven't seen Captain America 2, Thor 2. You know, it's like I'm really far behind just because I don't have 2 hours to sit down and spend time doing that anymore.
Yeah.
But for me, I probably need something like this because everything else in my life that I have carries weight. If I watch Thor 2, you know, as a pastor, I'm thinking about, okay, what are the worldview implications of this? So I'm reading my Valiant comics. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about something, which, by the way, currently I'm not really collecting too much action figures because all my lines are ending. But if Valiant comes out with something, I'm in trouble. But for me, I mean, it just, you know, it's everything, you know, books, anything, it carries some amount of weight. And so it's hard to turn it off. But this, it's just there's no theological implications. I mean, you got financial stewardship issues. And I try to be, you know, good and fall into a budget with all this, but, it's utterly pointless. And it's just for, pure entertainment and so I really think that's where it's at.
Then it's not pointless. I mean, if you get some sense of satisfaction, some sense of just kind of some pleasure, you know, there's certainly nothing pointless about that. So I don't think anybody's going to begrudge you unless they're a stinker.
well, and that's the other thing I wanted to put up on there is I was speaking with a young girl. I believe she was in like third or fourth. Well, maybe third grade, who was a baptismal candidate. And so I'm chatting with her about what baptism is and, going through the whole theology. I'm, you know, full disclosure, I'm Southern Baptist. And so I'm coming from that, vein of things and I'm, sharing with her all this and I'm asking her about what she understands of salvation and so we're having this deep conversation and she's got like all the, you know, she's right on the money. She's going things and she's like right in the middle. We're talking about salvation and she's getting it. And then she goes, why do you have action figures in your office? And without give it a beat, I'm like, it's because I'm a geek. And I was like, now what were you saying about Jesus rising from the dead?
Yeah.
And she rolled with it. Meanwhile, her mom's sitting there going, wait, what just happened? And she's like, yeah, what do you have all this stuff in your office for? I didn't notice that.
Now that is the kind of uncompartmentalized living that I'm striving after. So awesome. Amen.
Anyways, going back to your Crossover Alliance.
Yeah.
With David N. Alderman, I know he's a friend of the show. He heads up the Crossover Alliance, which essentially is edgy Christian speculative fiction. It's a little more edgy than the average Christian book would allow. And so sometimes it's not to be salacious. It's not to just be edgy for edgy's sake. The purpose of it is there are some negative areas of life that need to be portrayed so that we could process through them in story. And sometimes that's profanity. Sometimes that is portraying sexual situations. In fact, in the second book of the Black Earth saga, David Alderman has a scene in there and I'm not going to spoil it, but it's sexually, it's not terribly explicit, but it's enough. And I hate the fact that the scene is in there. And I'm like waiting for it to change. And I'm waiting for something to happen and it doesn't. And I absolutely loathed him for putting it in there because I hated what he did with the characters. But the fact is that stuff happens and the good guys make bad mistakes and in real life. And we never see that portrayed, and because it's not allowed, and you don't see the process of that fall. And so I read that and I'm horrified and just praying, God, don't ever let that happen to me. But then on the other side, you see the grace and the redemption that can happen, which you also don't get to see if you don't dive into the deep, dark places that oftentimes we're not allowed to go. And so, so really good stuff. And so with that, I think him and Mark Carver, another author, had, kind of devised, hey, let's put out, David started this group to kind of raise the awareness of edgy Christian speculative fiction. And, Mark said, hey, let's put out an anthology of short stories and see if we can do that. And so a number of people, a lot of whom have appeared on the Untold podcast, have contributed stories. I contributed two, one of which isn't terribly edgy, but really, really powerful. I think it's the most beautiful story I've ever told. And then the second one is a story I've had kicking around for, decades almost, but I've never had an audience, to share it with because it's in my creative writing class, a secular student once said, this is the most disgusting thing I've ever read in my entire life. And I said, thank you. Here's the Bible verses it comes from. and everyone was even more horrified as I passed around the sheets. I'd planned to do that of the Proverbs that this was based off of. And they're just, this is utterly disgusting. But it was real. And illustrated the biblical text. And so there's things like that and phenomenal. I've read through all of the stories that are in there already. And this anthology is coming out. It's going to be very low price. And we're doing that intentionally so that as many people, will read it, can read it. And it's coming out, Friday, September 26th. It's going to be great. It really, I think is going to be well received because there's just some phenomenal stories. It hits the whole gambit of speculative fiction. You've got, you know, semi-historical Viking saga to contemporary horror to futuristic science fiction. It's the whole gambit of fantasy. It's the whole gambit of things. Really good anthology, really good authors. And people can check that out at thecrossoveralliance.com.
Cool.
And click on all the links there to get information.
Cool. Thecrossoveralliance.com.
thecrossoveralliance.com.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Nathan, thank you very much. To everybody that's listening, I hope you guys will check out the Untold Podcast at untoldpodcast.com. Great stuff going on over there. Nathan, thank you very much for hanging out with me.
Thanks for having me.
I want to remind you guys to check out the other podcasts in the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, and the Untold podcast. For more info about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
This week we're taking a break from, I was going to say we're taking a break from examining a specific passage of the Bible, but that's not exactly true. This is a little bit different from even our normal different when we go off of our kind of a chronological or verse and chapter by chapter look at a book of the Bible. And the reason being that I just needed a little extra time to do some prep for what I had planned for In Search of Truth this week. And I realized that I had just recently been processing some stuff in one of my audio journal entries for Spirit Blade Insiders, who get those journal entries from me once a month. And by the way, if you want more information about what it means to be a Spirit Blade Insider, just go to spiritblade.net/donate. But anyway, I just was processing some things about myself that... You know, when I reflected back, I was thinking about what I wanted to create something, if possible, for the segment this week, even though I wasn't finished doing my prep on what I had planned. I was thinking, you know, this thing that I was processing is probably relevant to a lot of geeks, and that is finding your identity in what you create. And not all geeks are, you know, also like creating something, but in my experience, a high percentage of you guys are. You know, you're creating a podcast, or you're creating a maybe you're a writer, or maybe you're an artist and you're, you know, kind of creating like a web comic or something like that. But lots of you guys, and myself included, that are geeks are also actively creating something for others to interact with or to enjoy or to ingest or, you know, whatever form that might take. Maybe you've got a YouTube channel or something like that, but almost everybody that I can think of on the forums at Christian Geek Central, I've discovered at one time or another, is creating something. They're putting something out there for people to enjoy or take in some way. And I've just discovered some things about myself as a creative type, as a and there's just kind of some sensitivities that come along with that, and just kind of a tendency on my part to want to find my identity and my sense of worth in what I create. And specifically in this journal entry, I'm going to share just part of this journal entry with you, in which I kind of reflect on Psalm 39, and just kind of after spending some time studying it, I just kind of recorded in this journal entry some of my thoughts and applications for Psalm 39 to me that hopefully will be relevant to you guys. But anyway. Yeah, I think, oh, that's right. If I remember correctly, in this specific instance, I was kind of contemplating, I was changing up some things in my schedule that were kind of, you know, frustrating me in the short term, because they were like, I was falling short of accomplishing what I wanted to accomplish for the week in terms of mixing the audio drama that I'm working on right now. And when I fall short, you know, of the goals I set for myself, the baggage that can come along with that is this stress and insecurity that really is because I'm developing my sense of identity, my sense of self-worth on the wrong things, on the work that I'm putting out there, as opposed to my identity in Christ, as opposed to the significance His love gives to me, you know? And those are hard things to really draw my identity from on a day-to-day basis, because they're kind of lofty ideas. They're these kinds of they're ideas that are hard for us to grasp, because they're, you know, they're just kind of non-tangibles, you know, that are going to be realized in the future when we are glorified, when Jesus sets everything right. Then He's going to fix our mess, and He's going to bring into being, into actuality, the significant purpose for which we were made. And right now we're just beginning to enter into that purpose. But we're not really seeing the tangible side of it in the way that we will, in eternity. So this is something that I'm constantly wrestling with. And here are my thoughts on that whole issue, in regards to Psalm 39. So here in the last few hours of the day, I'm like, man, I should mix. I didn't mix at all yesterday. I didn't mix at all today. I got to mix, you know. And, but I, you know, whenever I feel that kind of pressure to like get something done, and I put this pressure on myself because I have these expectations that I place on myself that, you know, in one sense they're good because they keep me motivated, they keep me moving forward. But in other ways, you know, they're just a symptom of me basing my ideas of my worth, my value, my sense of what success is, you know, based on all the wrong things. So coming full circle, I just finished up my quiet time, and I'm going through with my study mentor. We're going through all the Psalms. I'm just kind of going through one at a time and picking them apart, and we meet about every 3 weeks, and each time we pick apart five psalms together. And I've arrived at Psalm 39, and this is like right out of my diary. Good gravy. This is a great psalm for me. So I'll just read it for you and maybe give some thoughts along the way from the ESV, starting in verse 1. I said, I will guard my ways that I may not sin with my tongue. I will guard my mouth with a muzzle, so long as the wicked are in my presence. And there's not a lot of details on what's going on with the psalmist here, but he's not wanting to sin with his tongue. He's experiencing frustration, possibly as a result of the wicked that are surrounding him. He's just feeling this frustration. We get a few more glimpses going forward. I was mute and silent. I held my peace to no avail, and my distress grew worse. My heart became hot within me. As I mused, the fire burned
So I'm like, as he was like contemplating his situation, it just made him feel worse and worse and worse. And he started getting angry. And he says, then I spoke with my tongue, O Yahweh, make me know my end and what is the measure of my days. Let me know how fleeting I am. Behold, you have made my days a few handbreadths, and my lifetime is as nothing before you. Surely all mankind stands as a mere breath, Selah. Surely a man goes about as a shadow. Surely for nothing they are in turmoil. Man heaps up wealth and does not know who will gather. So there's this sense of futility. Reminds me of Ecclesiastes, of just like, man, you know, life is so short. Help me to remember that. You know, put that in perspective. Put all this frustration in perspective. And all this effort that seems to be coming to nothing, you know. All this significance I'm trying to gain, and yet my life is like a shadow. It's like a breath before you. And then he goes on to say that in verse 6. Surely a man goes about as a shadow. Surely for nothing they are in turmoil. Man heaps up wealth and does not know who will gather. Oh, yeah, I already read that. And then verse 7. And now, O Adonai, he switches the language. Instead of saying Yahweh, he says, O Adonai, I believe. I haven't actually checked that, but I'm pretty sure that's Adonai when it says Lord there. Which I'm coming to suspect more and more is purposeful. That Adonai, you know, in the Messianic Psalms, you know, I'm seeing this pattern again and again, that Adonai, the lowercase Lord that we see, is seems to be applicable to Christ. That maybe there's something being said there in the Psalms that's specifically Trinity-related. Anyway, I won't get into that now, but I've got some growing suspicions there. Anyway, and now, O Adonai, for what do I wait? My hope is in you. So if it is true that this is referring specifically to Christ in some way, or is meant to refer to this messianic figure, this savior messianic figure, then it makes sense that my hope would be in him, in the salvation that he provides. You know, and now, O Lord, for what do I wait? You know, as if to say, you know, looking at these verses before, all the stuff, this wealth that people amass, it's all nothing, and it all serves nothing. It gets, you build up all this, you do all this work and try to create this thing, and who knows what's going to happen to it after you're gone. It's going to get thrown away, it's going to come to nothing, you know. So what am I waiting for, you know? Am I waiting for Christian Geek Central to build up into something in particular, or the community to grow into something particular, or the audio dramas to do something and reach a certain number of people in particular? What am I waiting for? What am I waiting? What's really going to satisfy me when I think about it? You know, I have this vision. You know, is that vision really going to satisfy me? What am I waiting for? The psalmist says, and now, O Adonai, for what do I wait? My hope is in you. Deliver me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the scorn of the fool. So his priorities are, you know what? I want to be right with you. Deliver me from my transgressions. And do not make me the scorn of the fool. Let me help me to believe and know that my life is not going to amount to just this joke, this waste of time that so many in the world, based on their worldviews, would consider it. Right now. I am mute, he says. I do not open my mouth, for it is you who have done it. This is an interesting turn in the psalm. Remove your stroke from me. I am spent by the hostility of your hand. So what he's feeling, the anguish he's feeling, he's now beginning to attribute to Yahweh. He says in 11, when you discipline a man with rebukes for sin, you consume like a moth what is dear to him. Surely all mankind is a mere breath. And I'm not sure this is what he's going through, but what it seems to me that's going on here that certainly applies to my life is that he's recognizing this frustration he's feeling over the futility of his life is the result of the discipline of Yahweh. And I would add to that that it's probably because he, like I, tends to not view his life correctly, not view what success truly is correctly. He doesn't view the meaning of his life, the significance of his life correctly. He's basing it on all the wrong things. And what is the natural consequence of that? Well, it's the discipline of Yahweh until he realizes how he is viewing his life wrongly. You know, the things that are dear to him are being consumed like a moth. You know, and I think of the joy being sucked out of the things I normally enjoy, my hobbies or just kind of life in general, my relationship with my wife or just whatever it is that I'm normally able to take joy in. All that is just kind of sucked away as I contemplate the futility and the lack of productivity that I'm experiencing. So he ends up saying, "Hear my prayer, O Yahweh, and give ear to my cry. Hold not your peace at my tears." So don't be silent as I'm, you know, as I'm dealing with this, as I'm wrestling with this. "For I am a sojourner, a traveler with you, a guest like all my fathers. Look away from me that I may smile again before I depart and am no more." So look away from me in terms of your discipline. You know, ease up. I get it now. You know, let me get my perspective fixed. And let me not see that side of you, that disciplinary side of you, so that I don't depart and become no more, so that it doesn't just grind me down and become the end of me, you know? So this Psalm 39, again, is, I made a note of that Psalm to come back to that again, because I need that correction in my perspective, and correcting my perspective in that way, I think is allowing me now to say, you know what? It's okay. Yeah, this new schedule, it seems to be working great. It has a lot of promise. And yes, it will help you be more productive, I think. But it's okay if you do this CGC channel stuff, especially since you've got some ideas that are bubbling around and you would probably be good to jump on right now. And especially since in the long run, this is going to allow you to create content for CGC more easily with less time needed to come up with alternate content that wouldn't be as easy to create, so blah, 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 blah. I'm really rambling here. I hope something in there has been useful to you, or at the very least insightful to what I'm experiencing, since that's primarily what these journal entries are meant to do, is to just kind of allow you to be a part of this journey with me. But if nothing else, I hope that you'll take a look at Psalm 39 yourself when you're experiencing some of the same symptoms of bad worldview that I tend to be plagued with. So anyway, that is all for now.
Feedback, input, I want to hear from you guys. Request a review, give me your thoughts, questions, whatever. It all helps me make the show better. Go to spiritblade.net/underground to record a message with your computer, or just send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.net. Well, if you haven't been by the Christian Geek Central channel on YouTube yet, then by the time this podcast goes up, you'll find there, unless something weird blew up on my computer or I became stupid somehow, which is, you know, always possible with me, but I'm uploading a new trial and error video. That's where I play through the first part of a game, or the trial or demo version of a game, usually play it badly, and give you my thoughts while doing so. And this edition of Trial and Error features Magic the Gathering 2015 for Xbox 360. So you can find that on the Christian Geek Central YouTube channel, or I should also be posting it to ChristianGeekCentral.com if you want to find it there. Also, if you'd be interested in helping to create content for that YouTube channel and promoting your own channel or site at the same time, please email me for more information at paeter@spiritblade.net. And now I want to remind you guys about Christian Geek Central's involvement in the Extra Life charity that's supporting the Children's Miracle Network of Hospitals. I think that's the name of the charity, but Children's Miracle Network. This charity raises money for children who otherwise their parents are not able to pay for their care, their medical expenses, and things like that. So if you'd like to be involved in that,
you can join the Christian Geek Central team and actually run your own personal 24-hour marathon. You don't have to live stream it like I'm going to live stream mine. You just have to commit to 24 hours of gaming. And you know, the charity, if you go on their site and get more information, it's really all on the honor system. You know, I mean, if you can't do 24 hours straight and you got to break it up into two 12-hour sessions or break it up even further than that over a course of a week, you know, they're fine with that. You know, it's really just about getting this money to these children and these families that really need it. So, but I am going to be doing 24 straight hours of video gaming, and that event is October 25th. October 25th is the nationwide Extra Life event. If you'd like more information, if you'd like to be a part of the Christian Geek Central team, I would love that, because really the goal that I would love to see the Christian Geek Central team combined together raise $1,000 for this charity. The way they basically encourage people to do it is to just each person commit to getting $200 in donations. And the way they recommend doing that is just sending an email or a letter. And they actually provide this great form letter to make it really easy if you're not really, you know, good at writing and stuff like that. To just, you know, see if you can get $20 from 10 different people. $20 from 10 different people. If I've done my math right, that's $200. And a lot of people in America have $20 that they can drop, and that they'd be more than happy to for something like this, even if, you know, you're going to be playing 24 hours of video games, which might sound really fun to them. It's actually probably going to be really challenging for me. I did a test run 3-hour streaming dealy, whatever you call it, a few weeks ago. And, man, I was getting tired by the end of that. I was already yawning by the end. I was like, oh, man, this does not bode well for a 24-hour attempt. But anyway, for more information, go to ChristianGeekCentral.com and click on, what is it? I think it says Join the Extra Life Team at the top. It's at the very top navigation, really easy to find. Just go to ChristianGeekCentral.com and click on the CGC Extra Life Team or something like that about Extra Life at the top there, and you'll get more information. You can also, of course, email me, and I'd be happy to fill you in. But it's really pretty basic. It's not really complicated. You're not actually, by the way, collecting money. You're just sending people to a website that's set up when you register to be a part of the event. So you don't have to handle any money. Nobody has to give you any money or write any checks or anything like that. They can do it all electronically with their credit card or PayPal. Really easy stuff. And I think a great cause. So anyway, yeah, there's that. And kind of in relation to that, I want to let you guys know that on Monday, September 29th, from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m., Pacific time, I am going to be doing another 3-hour live stream gaming. I was going to say marathon, but I don't know. 3 hours isn't really a marathon. That's kind of like a great Saturday night. but anyway, I'm going to be streaming myself playing video games as just another test run to work out technical issues and stuff like that. I would love it if you would drop by for that. The Twitch channel is just Christian Geek Central. I'm also going to be putting it on ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm going to be embedding the stream right there. So if you go to ChristianGeekCentral.com, September 29th from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific, you should be able to watch a video of me and even enter into the chat and communicate with me and stuff like that. So hopefully that'll be something that you'll enjoy, and I would also love your comments and feedback. As like I said, I really do want to try and work out as many kinks as possible before the big 24-hour event on October 25th. But September 29th, put that in your minds, 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific. I also want to remind you again that if you want to get involved at ChristianGeekCentral.com in kind of shaping what that animal becomes, there's a new way that you can do that, and that is as an author. I'm looking for content creators or content highlighters for CGC, so maybe you are interested in creating content, or maybe you already are creating content somewhere else, and you'd like to just reproduce some of that content at Christian Geek Central. That would be great. It would create content for Christian Geek Central and also provide a chance. chance for you to kind of promote what you're doing and get people to go over to your website to check out the full extent of the content that you have going on. So if something like that would interest you, let me know. Email me at paeter@spiritblade.net. And if you're not a content creator, but you'd still like to help out, I'm looking for people to kind of fill some roles of just kind of finding information that's out there, that it doesn't require any kind of creative work on your part. It's basically just... That's kind of hard to describe. Basically, what I want to see more and more on Christian Geek Central is a spotlight being shined on other websites, other content creators who maybe aren't going to come to Christian Geek Central themselves and, you know, take initiative in bringing their content to us, but that I still want to, for the sake of the kingdom, shine a light on what they're doing, because they're doing it with excellence and they're doing it with a high value of Scripture. So if you want to help me do that, basically what I'm thinking of doing is just saying, okay, you can, you know, if you're interested in, like, the publishing side of things, the book side of things, okay, then just, you know, I'll have you, like, subscribe to, you know, these publishers' newsletters and stuff, and just post. You can even just reproduce their newsletter post, you know, at CGC, and keep us all in the loop of the cool stuff going on with publishers like Splashdown and Enclave, who are publishing specifically sci-fi and fantasy that's aimed at the Christian audience, you know? Or maybe you want to just keep tabs on the Christians that are creating video games, or Christians that are creating comic books, or, you know, whatever. Whatever your area of interest is, there's probably an area of the internet where Christians are doing things in that area that I would love to highlight. So if you kind of want to keep tabs on, you know, a certain area of Christian geekery anyway, I would love to have you involved in helping us to highlight that God-honoring content at ChristianGeekCentral.com. So anyway, if any of that sounds remotely interesting and you want more details, email me at paeter@spiritblade.net. All right. Whew, a lot of announcements this week. I'm sorry if that was totally boring to you. For something more interesting, you can stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 to start from the very beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, I'm going to have a review of The Maze Runner, yet another one of these young adult sci-fi slash fantasy novels being turned into movies. I was going to wrap up the show, but it just came to mind, so I can't help but comment. My wife and I watched Divergent last week, and we borrowed it from my parents because I was just like, definitely didn't want to see it in theaters. Didn't want to drop even $1.50 at Redbox. Was hesitant to even give up my time to try it out, but my parents had a copy, and we borrowed it from them. I got a full two-thirds of the way through the movie. I don't know if you've seen this movie, but there's way too much training and not enough story going on. it's not a terrible movie, but man. And you know what? I'll tell you what good came out of it was that the actress that that plays the lead in that movie, she has been cast as Mary Jane for the Amazing Spider-Man movies. She actually has filmed some scenes already for Amazing Spider-Man 2 that were cut and are not, I'm sad to say, on the Blu-ray. I kind of knew that. I knew they would want to kind of keep that tucked away so people couldn't prejudge, you know, The Amazing Spider-Man 3 based on her performance in the scenes she filmed in Amazing Spider-Man 2. I imagine when 3 comes out, and specifically the Blu-ray for 3 comes out, they'll probably have the deleted scenes that she did for 2 on that Blu-ray, or they'll re-release Amazing Spider-Man 2, you know, as this, you know, super-duper uncut Mary Jane edition or whatever. But anyway, the gal that plays the lead in Divergent, she's playing Mary Jane, unless she's recast. She's playing Mary Jane Watson in Amazing Spider-Man 3. And from the trailer I saw of Divergent, I was like, oh, man, she just looks... I think all the shots they chose for that trailer, she's the most wooden and uncomfortable and shy and uncomfortable looking as she could possibly be. And I'm like, how are you going to replace... Emma Stone. My gosh, Emma Stone should have been Mary Jane. I mean, she, for me anyway, I find Emma Stone so freaking charming. Oh my gosh, my wife feels the same way. You know, we just love watching her just in general, I think, but in her role as Gwen Stacy, wonderful. And the chemistry that she had with, I can't remember his name, that plays Spider-Man, but you're going to tell me. But the chemistry that they had was just fantastic. Ugh, man. Well, the watching Divergent, even though it was a bore fest and I just gave up after two-thirds of the way through. I mean, I didn't completely give up. I just went and got my DS and played Shin Megami Tensei: Strange Journey while keeping one earbud out so that I could kind of follow along with the movie. But what it did do for me was it made me feel like, okay, she's solid. She's a solid actor, you know. And I saw trailers for two other movies that she was in before Divergent started up on that Blu-ray, in which I saw a lot more of her range. And so I'm like, okay, she'll be good. She'll be good. I mean, she's not going to be bad. She's going to be a great, solid, probably, or she certainly has the potential to be that. You know, I don't have any worries about that. My only concerns left will be, will her chemistry be the same? You know, I don't think she's going to be as charming as Emma Stone. I'm not sure that she needs to be for Mary Jane, but man, will that chemistry between the two actors work on screen? And, you know, we'll just kind of wait and see. But anyway, blah, 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 blah. So on that, we come full circle. So Maze Runner, another one of these, Divergent, The Giver, how many other of these movies are there? All these kind of, you know, Hunger Games types. We'll see another one of those, probably, and we'll see what happens. Hopefully it'll be great. Hopefully it'll surprise me. I'm not sure what to think. Some of the trailers look kind of cool, but I don't know. I'm kind of young adult fantasied out right now, so we'll see. Anyway, till then, thanks so much for making time for this show. I hope that you have a great week and that you join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Friends and with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.net. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
All right. Episode 121, Season 1 of Farscape, Bone to be Wild. Good, solid episode. But I find that for me personally, it doesn't stand up well to repeat viewing because so much of it is dependent upon the multiple twists in the story. And, you know, once you've seen this more than, or even just once, but especially once you've seen it more than once, you remember all those twists and turns, and it just doesn't hold interest as much. That said, I think it's still a really well-done episode for the most part. But yeah, I love those twists, you know, because it's very common in sci-fi, like, you know, initially the ugly guy is scary and the nice-looking alien is innocent, but then you find out, ooh, it's actually the reverse. You weren't expecting that, but that's such a tired cliche. And they take that, and like they do so many cliches, they subvert it. And I say, okay, well, yeah, that's what you're going to see initially, but then we're going to twist it again so that you'll find out that the horrific guy is actually... he actually is horrific, and the nice looking monster chick is actually nice, or wants to be, you know. So I like that. There was great exchange when Anthony Simcoe is slowly more and more having these moments of just like he's a normal dude. He's acting like a normal guy. Like when they first land on the planet, and you know. He's all these kind of allergens are affecting him, and he's building up all this mucus, you know, and he's like, Zan, let me just explain to you a moment what's going on inside my nose. There's all these big, you know, green clusters of mucus, and da da da, you know, and then John says, whoa, okay, enough with the Lux and poetry. So that was like a 1-2 punch, because it was just funny the way he was just like, you know, it was just a very human kind of way that he was speaking and acting, and he was just like a normal dude, a normal guy. He's like, you know what, let me explain to you what's going on right now, you know, and then the line about Lux and poetry, like, you know, that says something in that moment about what John thinks about Luxans and what their poetry would be like based on, you know, their warrior culture. And but if I haven't mentioned it before, I do think it's worth noting, you know, on a mostly unrelated note, that unlike, say, Klingons that are like just hardcore kind of just warriors, you don't get the sense that there's a lot of the art appreciation among Klingons. You do get the sense that in Dargo's culture that they are warrior poets, which is a nice touch. You know, we got the Shioquin and stuff like that. And then you can have more layers and levels to Dargo's character. So, but anyway, yeah, I like that little exchange. Then we find out that Zan is a plant and also has some strange predator ability to camouflage herself, which I don't believe ever gets used in the rest of the series, which is really strange. Really strange. I don't think they quite knew what they were doing when they introduced that. I guess we could rationalize, well, when she's in a really floral environment and then her, you know, biological systems or floral or whatever, they're all like boosted from being in this great floral environment, and so she can take advantage of these powers of camouflage, you know. But they don't ever say that, to my memory. So that was just kind of a weird thing. And it's, you know, when you do that kind of thing, then it leaves a lot of room for Deus Ex Machina, where it's just like, you know, if we ever get into trouble, just invent a new power for Zan to have that we've never mentioned before, you know. So I wasn't a big fan of that. Let's see here. Oh, there's this interesting kind of philosophical exchange where Zan defends plants. You know, she's like, you know, I don't want to condone what Bernese people did, but, you know, maybe, you know, in light of saving all this remarkable flora, it wouldn't be unreasonable. And she never gets the chance to finish that sentence, so we can't properly criticize what her sentiment was or her statement was. John interrupts her and he says, you know, to save, you know, to murder people, to save a bunch of stinking plants, you know, or murder sentient beings, he says, to save a bunch of stinking plants, you know. And she says, how very animal-centric of you, John. I am a stinking plant, you know. And I'm not sure what's going on there. There's just some weird kind of... Zan's just... She's not really thinking logically, I don't think, there. Because, okay, if let's pretend for a moment that there's such a thing as sentient beings who are plant-based. Well, then, yeah, John would be overstepping to say, you know, stinking plants or whatever. But we aren't talking here about sentient plants on this planet. We're talking about plants the way we normally think of plants. And so in that regard, I think we're talking about very different things. And Zan ought to be able to see that. She ought to be able to see that there is a huge difference between a sentient being like herself, who is flora evolved, as they say, and a weed, you know, or a tree or something like that. She ought to be able to make that distinction. And the fact that she can't just makes her come across as like this extreme environmentalist, you know. That would be like, I guess, kind of like me saying that worms are really important, you know. I mean, a worm and I are both biological, but there's a huge difference between what a worm is and what I am or what you are, you know, or what any human is, you know. And so for her to not be able to see and recognize that distinction and value sentient life as far and above more valuable than non-sentient, just like fungi and, you know, molds or whatever, you know, that's really pretty extreme. That's a pretty darn extreme environmentalist view that I just... You know, and maybe they're just kind of recklessly toying with these extreme ideas. You know, they're just like, oh, let's create conflict and put it in the script. On the other hand, maybe there's somebody in the mix there that that does have some kind of an environmentalist agenda. I don't know. I don't think you can tell that from the script. But I do think something like that is worth talking about and worth dissecting the words a little bit so that when we get to, you know, similar conversations in the real world, we can think a little bit more carefully about what it is we're saying and talking about. Let's see here. Oh, I loved Wayne Pigram. I can't remember how you pronounce his last name. But the different voices he has for Scorpius, and this is the first time we see him using that lower, that monstrous voice. And then he goes right back into this higher voice, you know, and it's a, so that contrast is really great. You get the sense that he's constantly containing himself, that there is a beast within him that, that we haven't been acquainted with yet. And so it, it makes his bottling all that more intense, and it makes him all that more unpredictable to know that he can unleash this incredible strength and this beast inside of him. So that was a great, great addition to his character here. What's up with the Xan doll? You know, when Xan gets shrunk and put into a jar, looked a lot like a little Barbie doll with clothes that did not look miniaturized. They looked like, you know, clothes that were, you know, made of normal-sized fabric wrapped around this little Xan doll, which they put in a glass that kind of distorted the image so they could hide a little bit. But I still have to wonder what was going on there. Why was she frozen and not moving? It was just kind of... I don't know. I would rather they did kind of a, I guess a cheap, I don't know if matte shot is the right word, but not even CGI, but just kind of like a photo replacement type thing where they show her inside the jar for a second instead of putting the Xan doll in there. That was a weird choice. That was the one place where I guess I would say that a some kind of digital trickery would have been better than the practical effect that they went with, if you can call that an effect. Luckily, it was brief. We got the nice Tron-inspired effect from the miniaturizer. When it reconstructs people, it does that horizontally scanning, reassembling type thing that from the original Tron movie. That was cool. And then we end the episode with this nice sense of family, it felt like. You know, we had these little conversations going on between Aaron and John, and Xan and Dargo. And then, of course, that moment, even though they're kind of fighting, it's almost like a couple of siblings fighting under the blanket with Chiana and Rigel. And, of course, Moya wants Aaron to name her baby. So it's all this very kind of family kind of... These family kind of exchanges. They're building this idea of family, this feeling of family among the crew. And in a realistic sense, because they're fighting and they're not getting along and they see the world differently and stuff like that, but there's still this very clear bond that has developed between them. And that's really cool. Really cool to see. And that's what makes it work when they're fighting. You know, that's what makes it not frustrating and depressing to me. When they're constantly bickering and fighting is because they pepper the show with moments like this where you see that despite of and even in the midst of conflict with each other, they are still having these moments that clearly demonstrate love and affection. So, all right, there you go. Next time, last episode of season one, number 122, Family Ties. Get ready.